and me, babe, we've been together so long. Talking late night on the telephone. I'm borrowing your car and you're eating my food. Let's move in together. I heard love could move mountains. Came along so lean and strong. I thought we could give it a try. Let's move in together. I've got some extra room in the basement. Vacuum up the bug. Slap some paint on the cinder block. Put a rug down for the dog. Let's move in together. Let's move in. All about. Now when we say goodnight, we can take our time. Let's move in together. I've got some extra room in the basement. We'll vacuum up the books. Slap some paint on the cinder block. Put a rug down for the dog. Let's move in together. Let's move in.
It's Sunday afternoon and time once again for Wordplay. I'm your host, Jeff Davis, and joining me in the studio today for another special edition of the Laureates Radio Hour, Kathy Smith Bowers. Hello, Kathy. How are you today?
I'm fine, Jeff Davis. How are you?
I'm doing good. Doing good. Nice spring weather we've been having
it
up
is.
Here.
Yeah.
They're calling for a frost tonight, mm-hmm. So there you go. Not May yet, but we're moving on. Yeah.
It's gorgeous.
And you have a special guest today.
I do have a special guest. I'm honored to have here tonight Michael Beadle. I met Michael in the Great Smokies program several years ago and very quickly became a huge fan of not only Michael's writing, but of his endearing and immense humanity. And what I want to do tonight is to shine a light on Michael Beadle's broad range of talent as a poet and writer and performance artist and teacher. So, Michael Beadle, welcome, welcome.
Well, thank you so much. That's hard to live up to such a great introduction.
Yeah.
Good to be here.
I can't think of enough good things to say about you, Michael, but...
it's true. She's been saying good things about you for weeks.
I absolutely have.
Thank you.
I was very excited when Jeff agreed to let me do one Sunday a month, and you were one of the first ones that I thought of. I'm having Michael Beadle on the Laureates Hour.
Well, thank you. Good to be here.
Michael, tell us a little bit about your background, where you were born, grew up, and maybe just and how you got into the literary life.
Well, I was born in upstate New York in Syracuse, and as a child, my parents divorced, and so mom moved us to North Carolina. So I basically grew up in eastern North Carolina. That's where I picked up this accent and decided to move west. So I went to UNC Chapel Hill and got a journalism degree and took jobs at community newspapers and ended up coming this way. But something happened in high school that really changed my life. I went out to see a movie with Robin Williams in it, Dead Poets Society. You know, at that point, I didn't really understand what poetry was. And I came back from that experience, seeing that movie, and just started writing my first two poems. Just something happened. So I think ever since then, I've really just felt a calling, just a voice of wanting to write about what's around me. Mm-hmm. And so I've taken some great classes through Great Smokies writing program with you, and I've been really blessed to have a lot of really good English teachers, mm-hmm. Wonderful teachers along the way, so and great mentors that have really inspired me, and I think just encouraged me just to do what I love doing. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't have to be anything that I'm not. I think poetry teaches us wonderful virtues. Mm-hmm. About humanity, about empathy, about endurance, and I try to live that. I try to find that in my poetry and try to share that with my poetry.
Well, I certainly do see that in you, Michael, and thank God for the Dead Poets Society.
I guess the best teacher I ever had was one I never had. The movie, uh-huh. Robin Williams plays a teacher, yeah. Mr. Keating. So.
I think you're the only poet I've ever had on the show who got into poetry through a movie.
Through a movie.
This is the first.
That's
strange,
yeah. That's so, great. That's so, great.
Yeah.
Well, Michael, one of the things that to me really shines through you is that this is not just, you're not just a dilettante. This is in your this is in your cells. This is in your blood. This is your life. This is how you live your life. And that really does shine through for me. So I hope that since you told us a little bit about your childhood and your parents, and I know that you've got some wonderful, wonderful, poignant, beautiful poems regarding those things. So would you read to us now?
Sure, I'd love to. I think one of the things that I've learned through you as a teacher and through writers like Fred Chappell, I've read some Ron Rash and people like that, they try as best they can to give dignity to people, and where better to look with that than your family. Mm-hmm. So, you know, as family members, we don't always get along.
Right.
I come from a divorced parents, and yet trying to find some value in learning the lessons, relationships. And so the one and only time I've ever played basketball with my father, I had to write a poem about it. And it's called The Scar. No bigger than a fingernail clipping, a comma placed at the root of my writing hand, where wrist bends to release a free throw. Perhaps I had meant to mark my skin with this memory, the only time we would ever play basketball together, the only chance I had to show you my jump shot, honed since junior high. For years I tested post moves and reverse layups against all those who would stand proxy for an absent dad. You were drinking martinis all afternoon, but somehow I talked you into driving down to the park to shoot some hoops before dinner, maybe catch a full-court pickup game with shirts and skins, school kids wrestling the last days of summer in a tangle of arms, rebounding, sprinting into fast breaks, daring defenders with sharp cuts and quick shots, waiting to get in the next game. I showed off my own moves, a court over, swishing threes, launching fadeaways, losing defenders with a pump fake and a pivot, betraying the swagger I'd learned from Air Jordan. The ball we brought needed air, but I didn't care. You clawed for a rebound after I blocked your shot. That's when I felt the nick, blood rising through skin, the sting of sweat on the side of my hand. It didn't matter you called me by my brother's name or demanded we leave, worried you saw too many blacks in a neighborhood nearing dusk. After you left, the shirts and skins disbanded. Courts closed for the night. Shadows fell against the asphalt. I dribbled back up the hill to your house. Blood dried on my hand, forming a thin arc, a faint smile I carried with me in the dark.
Wow. Michael, that line, "It didn't matter you called me my brother's name," just, that line carries worlds in it. It's just tender and poignant and heartbreaking. And I just love this poem. It's not only in, you know, the sentiment of the poem and the story of the poem, but your use of language is just really exquisite.
Well, thank
and
you.
With also some touches. I love that self-effacing. You know, you do a wonderful job of showing that kind of vulnerable innocence of a young boy that age.
Right.
And
yeah.
Just absolutely gorgeous.
Well, you know, sometimes poems, you know, pop up in your head and you say, all right, I'm going to write about that beautiful sunset or that experience you just had. Some poems just stick around with you for years. And I really wanted to write this kind of poem for years. And I think drawing out the experience and just finding a way, a metaphor, to draw out that experience, I think helped.
Mm-hmm.
And then just trying to be honest.
I
think that's what poets try to do more than anything else, is just be as honest as possible about what happened.
And I think it's one of the first things that comes through to a reader when you're not being honest. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just not true.
And maybe playing a few too many word games.
Yeah.
And playing
too clever.
Yeah.
Too,
trying to be cute and sort of interjecting. I know how to use language.
That's right. Let me show you how smart I am.
Right. When it's really the poem that needs to be put forth first.
Absolutely. Well, you certainly do that.
Thank you.
I love how the title resonates metaphorically and, you know, on so many different levels. Just beautiful.
Well, thanks. I think, you know, sometimes we struggle with titles, and I think sometimes just to make it real simple and pull back.
That's right.
You know, be cold.
That's right. I call my poems things like sponges, groceries.
Uh-huh.
You know, it works. It works.
Yeah.
Well, how about another one, Michael?
Sure. You know, going to my sister now, and my sister and I grew up as children in a divorced family. But we were very close, very close. We fought all the time over everything. Who got to sit in the front seat? You know, who gets to mash the buttons on the elevator, or whatever.
All natural.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And we,
those elevator buttons, that was crucial.
It was just always about that. Who talked on the phone longest, whatever. And now she's on the West Coast. She is happily married to a seismologist, and yet, you know, there's a part of me as a big brother. I want to be protective. I want to, you know, look after her. And, of course, we used to go to a pool nearby in our neighborhood, and we used to play all these games and all those kind of things. And one of those great games is Marco Polo. So a person calls out Marco, and another, you're supposed to, the call and response, I guess, is Polo. So, but the person saying Marco is supposed to close his or her eyes. And so you're supposed to search out for the person who's saying Polo. You're supposed to get that person. So I thought I'd call to mind this childhood memory. Marco Polo for Susan. Remember summers at the pool, sunburns and flip-flops, grilled hot dogs and fingers stained with Kool-Aid, cannonballs beside unsuspecting girls, belly flops, handstands, underwater somersaults, testing breath all the way to the deep end. The bored lifeguard perched on her throne, surveying the circus of splash with a red-stringed whistle twirling, untwirling into a knotted ring. Remember when we played Marco Polo, wading through water, eyes shut? I would call out, wait for others to reply. Marco Polo. Marco Polo. Yours, younger sister, was the voice I trained my ears to find, for no distance could keep us apart. Dried off with beach towel tunics, you forever the princess, and I, the newly hired bodyguard sent to protect, acted out our scripts to survive in a fatherless kingdom. Today, when I stumble across the name of that famous explorer, I dial your number, long distance. Leave a message and wait for a single word to span the ocean that lies between us.
Oh, Michael. Oh, that one passed the goosebump test.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
Of course, most of yours do.
Oh, thank you.
Oh, wow.
I sent that to my sister, Susan, and she said she cried. I guess part of it, too, was just reaching out to her to communicate, making sure we keep in touch and remembering that. You know.
What a metaphor. The gang, Marco Polo, yeah. Calling out Marco and then waiting. And yours was the voice I always waited to hear, and then to segue into that telephone call.
And again, I think if we're trying to tap into that family memory and really seek out what it was of the love that we have with family, is to find the metaphor. Sometimes it works to really draw that out. Mm-hmm. So that's the power of language.
Yeah.
Last night I dreamed that I was a child. Out where the pines grow wild and tall, I was trying to make it home through the forest before the dark. The wind rustling through the trees, and ghostly voices rose up from the fields. I ran with my heart pounding down that broken pathway with the dead, snapping at my ear. I broke through the trees, and there in the night, my father's house stood shining hard and bright. The branches and brambles tore my clothes and caused me harm, but I ran till I fell shaking in his arms. I awoke and imagined the never again, sir, tear us from each other's hearts. I got dressed into that house I did ride. From out on the road, I could see its windows shining in light. I walked up the steps and stood on the porch. A woman I didn't recognize spoke to me through a chain door. I told her my story and who I'd come for. She said, "I'm sorry, son, but no one by that name lives here anymore." Thank you. shines like a beacon, calling me in the night, calling and calling, so cold and alone, shining across this dark highway where our sins lie unatoned.
You're listening to Wordplay on Asheville FM. I'm your host, Jeff Davis. With me in the studio today, North Carolina Poet Laureate, Kathy Smith Bowers, and Michael Beadle.
Michael Beadle. Michael, I'm already nervous about, because your talent is so broad and what you're doing. I definitely want to move on to what you're doing with your history writing, but I cannot move on until I hear you read a poem called A Kiss of Sorts. Would you please read that for us?
Yes, thank you. Thank you. It's good to be able to share some of these. This next one is really for my parents. A Kiss of Sorts. 25 years after my parents' divorce, I find a way to arrange a kiss between them. It begins with a coffee mug, a scene of the Seine and the Eiffel Tower painted on its side. I picture Dad sipping his morning coffee, chapped lips pausing at the rim as he skims headlines. Gazing out the window of his Right Bank Hotel, his Russian wife still in the bathroom, he decides to send the cup as a Christmas present to his son, makes a silent toast to mornings spent apart. A week after New Year's, Mom, passing through on a trip to San Francisco, rises with me at dawn. I pull out that same mug, spoon out the Folgers. We think in whispers as we wait for the water to boil. I imagine the way Mom and Dad would hold the cup as they had held me. Dad with a firm grip on the handle. Mom with cupped hands around the sides to seal in the warmth. I imagine their mouths finding the same lip on that mug, each drinking with the faint taste of a love they once shared.
Oh, wow.
Nice.
Oh, that, I would say it leaves me speechless, but you hear that I'm still yakking away, but, you know, we will.
This is radio. Speechless doesn't work.
That's right. No mimes, right?
Just nod your head. Just nod your head.
Thank you, Jeff, for reminding me of that, okay? We will, as children of parents that we did not feel loved each other, we will find a way to make that happen. And boy, this poem, that imaginative leap you take there is just lovely.
Well, I did share it with my mom. I have not shared it with my dad. So it was published in the Raleigh News Observer.
Oh.
So before it was published, I said, "Mom, I've got a poem for you. Uh-huh. Don't get weird about it."
Uh-huh.
Part of it was invented. But I did get that mug.
Yeah.
And I did have her drink it.
Oh, okay.
I drink from it. But I wasn't sure that, you know, he had, uh-huh, you know, used it. But I just thought, you know, again, a metaphor. Sometimes
it is,
you can use that.
And what a love poem. It really is.
So it's a different way of looking at love, I guess.
Did she like it?
She did.
Yeah.
She did.
Well, I can't imagine her not.
Well, thank you.
Michael, you are a historian and are quite a busy historian. So, and of course, some poems have come from those two. But tell us about your work in history.
Well, about 5 years ago, I started just writing a little bit more about local history. I live in Haywood County. And, I really never gave it a lot of thought. I worked as a journalist doing local human interest stories and got into learning all about mountain music. And there's a lot of great musicians who have come out of this area. We've had folk dancers that have performed in front of the King and Queen of England. We've had all kinds of folk dancers and musicians who have been Folk Heritage Award winners from this area. Mm-hmm. And so I started with that. And then the library was getting together with the local Haywood Historical Society on a comprehensive Haywood County book. And last year was the 200th anniversary of Haywood County. Mm-hmm. So in preparation for that, we thought, hey, let's do this great big comprehensive book. Well, nobody thought it was going to be this long. What we thought we could do in about a year, it took about 4 years. Mm. Uh-huh. And we just kept getting photographs and things. So that was published, that book, A Portrait of a Mountain Community, was published right before Christmas. Mm-hmm. And I just could not stop. I started getting all these interesting photographs. So I was contacted by Arcadia Publishing. They're out of South Carolina. And they do all these local history books on historical photographs. And so I just published one on Haywood County, and it's got all these wonderful, interesting stories with each photograph. Mm-hmm. And I'm continuing to do another one on Waynesville. It's the 200th anniversary of the founding of Waynesville this year. Mm-hmm. So as we celebrate these anniversaries, it's interesting to document. And so that's been really exciting to find all these stories and photographs.
Both of those books are so beautiful, and I can't wait to have my own copy of the Haywood County book. The photographs are just mesmerizing. So what a gift that you've given all of us for bringing all of this important stuff together.
I think it's just an opportunity to kind of, to me, giving back. I feel so blessed to live in a county and live in an area that has so much wonderful, rich history, and to be able to go into people's homes and say, listen, I want to make sure that people remember this person or this mm-hmm. place or this church mm-hmm. or this building that once stood. And, you know, it's a wonderful equalizer for a lot of people. I've talked to a lot of different people, different generations, to be able to share those stories. And a lot of older folks really want to share that.
Yeah.
And I want to be a connector. I want to be able to pass that on to the next generation. Mm-hmm. So,
Michael, we'll say this again later, so we'll make sure that everybody hears it at least twice, but you're going to do a book signing with for the newest little, the Haywood
right.
County.
Uh-huh.
So when is that going to be? And
well, it's going to be kind of a dual event. It's going to be my history book that just came out, Haywood County, and also the Portrait of a Mountain Community, which is a larger book. And we're going to have a book signing at Malaprop's bookstore in downtown Nashville on May the 10th at 7 p.m.
May the 10th May at 7 10th. P.m. Let's be there, and let's make sure to remind everybody of that again before we
right.
finish tonight.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you.
We'll do that.
So, Michael, you have some poems that have also been crafted out of your studies and your pulling together and compiling all of your history stuff. So would you share some of those with us?
Sure. I'd love to. One was based on a true story of a Civil War soldier. He fought for the Confederacy, left Haywood County, came back. Actually, he was captured in war, served a prison sentence, was, pardoned, I guess. He had to take his oath to the Union and came home. War's over. He's there farming his land, and the Home Guard, which was charged with making sure that they captured deserters, a lot of times dealt out their own vigilante justice. They captured him and they killed him, even though the war was over. And I was just so amazed by the story, just really shocked. It's a real story. There's someone that's right here, in your backyard that this happened. And I wanted to dedicate a poem to him. So this is called The Home Guard. For Private Elijah Jenkins, Company E, 29th North Carolina Infantry Regiment, 1828 to 1865. I was born the son of deep creeks and dark hollers. I farmed the fallow fields. I learned the promise of yoke and plow. Leaned my back into shallow swaths of crooked earth. I lived to hunt and fish. Took a wife who bore me steady hands to sow and shuck. When war came, I kissed my Polly goodbye, told my boys to look after their sister, fatten up a hog for my return. Mama made sure I had a mess kit, a Bible, and corn pone for my haversack. We mustered up in Asheville, swore no army would set foot in these hills. They called us the Haywood Fire Shooters. We kept those Federals on the run from Cumberland Gap to Mobile, whipped old Rosie and his boys at Murfreesboro and Chickamauga. But damn that General Bragg for making us turn and run like dogs. We cursed his name as we marched on half rations through mud and snow. I prayed for wool socks and a letter from home. always kept my jackknife clean, stuck a lucky button in my pocket. When they captured me in the dunes of Alabama, I had no shirt, no shoes, no Bible. But Providence spared me for a month in prison. I took their oath, made my way home to Cove Creek, where Polly and sons tall as me would be waiting. I dreamed of blackberries floating in buttermilk, stacks of hoe cakes, smoked bacon, the silver streams of Jonathan's Creek. Come May, I was out in the fields again, working a new furrow with a bony mule. Now that's when the home guard came, hot as the devil's whiskey, still waging their own war, stealing livestock and whatever else was hid from Union raids. Said I was a deserter, said I was unfit to wear the uniform. So they dragged me into the woods, bound me like a runaway slave. We marched by night to White Oak, where a jury of one-armed men convened around a campfire. Such crimes as mine harbor no mercy, and no truth would set me free. 3 days later, friends found me under a gyre of vultures and let me rest on a hilltop of Sarvis, far from the cannon, still a ways from home.
Oh, wow.
I did a lot of research for that, you know, not just learning about what was happening here in Western North Carolina, but, you know, what a soldier would carry, what was happening in this part of the country mm-hmm. during that time. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, just like with any war, it's a mess. It's not sort of good guys, bad guys.
Mm-hmm.
It's really a mess. There are people who are killed by friendly fire. You know, there are people who are making the most of their opportunity during mm-hmm. the war. There were all kinds of vengeances of different families fighting back and forth. It had nothing to do with the war.
Scores settled.
Yeah. So that kind of thing. So it's really learning more about history and finding what I think is really fascinating is finding those personal stories.
Mm-hmm.
I've been able to uncover a diary from 1898. That's a soldier, is a lawyer locally here, Haywood County, who fought in the Spanish-American War, which I didn't really study much in the Spanish-American War in school, but learned all about that. Doing some more research,
mm-hmm.
and that was real fascinating to find out a real diary, mm-hmm. you know, from that time period. He's writing to his beloved Josephine. He's getting dear Josephine letters, and so it's really neat to hear that.
Well, Michael, is it difficult to go from the prose that you work in within your history stuff, and then? Because you still have this still feels looser than a lot of poems, especially your poems, some of the ones you just read. And yet it's compressed. It's still a poem. This is still poetry. This is energy.
Mm-hmm.
How do you do that? How do you make that shift from the prose to poetry, especially when you're working with the same subject matter?
Well, I think I naturally work that way because I have a journalism background where journalists are taught you have to get to the point right away. You don't have time to dally around. And poetry does that. Poetry is immediate. You don't have time to just sort of play around. You want to get straight to the point. And so I think journalism has been a great teacher for me and reading a lot of stories and making sure I say what I need to say and mm-hmm. get out of the way.
Mm-hmm.
I think I naturally think like a poet. I just think that's the way my mind works. I think in metaphors. I think in that way. And I love the play of language. I've always loved accents and dialects mm-hmm. and, you know, learning different words.
I know you do, Michael.
I love that. So. Love it. So, I think it's just learning. What I'm really interested in right now is taking a narrative that we know. And I've got one about a biblical story. And taking that narrative and sort of transmogrifying it. Mm-hmm. It's a big word for basically taking prose and putting it into a poem.
Mm-hmm. Can you share that with
us? Sure. This one's a little bit on the lighter side. It's about Moses. And, of course, Moses at the end of his life is shown the land of milk and honey, but can't get there. It's not his destiny, his fate to be there. I thought of this was just an interesting way of sort of changing time periods and playing around with anachronisms and things like that. So just really had a lot of fun with this poem. It's a little lighter. So it's called Enough Already, which is what my grandmother used to say. She's a Jewish lady, a teacher, grew up in New York and was a longtime English teacher in New York City. So Enough Already. God was sick of the children of Israel. whining in the desert. It was summer in the Book of Numbers, a long ride to the nearest Shell station. Moab could have been Timbuktu for all they cared. Even the manna had gotten stale. Down to hummus and snake jerky, they were tired of schlepping tents, digging for water in all the wrong places. Just once it'd be nice to sit poolside in Palm Beach with lox and a bagel, fresh OJ and a Times crossword. Moses, newly diagnosed with colon cancer, knew he wouldn't set foot in Canaan. If only the people caught a glimpse of those green pastures the TV ads promised. Maybe then it would all be worth it. Waiting out the plagues, putting up with Yul Brynner's smirks, the sandstorms, bickering tribes, waking from nightmares where chariots chased them over cliffs and golden calves swallowed their children. Miles from the nearest miracle, Moses would rise before dawn, hike alone in the hills beyond camp, recalling his mother's knishes, the warm smells of a kosher deli, the bakery just around the corner that served the best cheese blintzes, so tender, so divine.
Thank you.
Wordplay. I'm your host, Jeff Davis. You're listening to Asheville FM, as you no doubt already know, since you're listening on the internet and you had to get there. With me today in the studio, Kathy Smith Bowers and Michael Beadle. Take it away, Miss Bowers.
Thank you, Jeff Davis. Michael, you are a teacher. You also do performance poetry. Just tell us, there's so much that I want you to tell us about, so just tell us whatever interests you that you would like to share with us.
Well, my family's background is a lot of teachers there. My dad is a longtime professor. He's retired.
My grandmother was a teacher. My mom started out in Head Start. So I've got a lot of teaching in my family, and I just fell into teaching because I just thought I wanted to do something a little different after journalism, and became a high school English teacher. And then I found out about the artist in residency program. You could basically contract with local arts councils, and so I started doing that. And basically, I just go around the state teaching poetry and creative writing. And I just think this is an amazing way to make a living, sharing the wonder of words with kids. The main thing is I'm trying to teach literacy about poetry. You know, learning more than just those old dead white men mm-hmm. or the writers of poetry. Lots of different types of poetry out there, not just the haiku and the limerick. But I'm trying to teach French forms. I teach the pantoum, mm-hmm. You know, different forms. The triolet, a French form, it uses rhyme and repetition. So just trying to open up, you know, different avenues that way, and also. Getting involved with some statewide contests so that kids can find out about different contests and just get a head start, because that's how I got started. I was involved in some writing contests as a student in middle school and high school, and that's what really, you know, pushed me on. So I want to try to do that for the next generation and try to give that. So I try to give them some performance poetry to kind of get their attention, mm-hmm. because when you go into middle school, you better be prepared.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and I love hearing from teachers, well, my kids, they don't really like to write. And I say, great. You're just the kind of kids mm-hmm. I want to be with.
Oh, yeah.
And so, you know, finding a different angle. And if I'm a male coming into a school where a lot of times their teachers are female, and a lot of times they don't see male writers, mm-hmm. or they will encounter them just through books. Mm-hmm. So I want to just kind of be a different voice for them and let them see what poetry can be about. Mm-hmm. So I'll give them a poem, like a performance poem to kind of get things started.
Mm-hmm.
So let me bust one out.
Please do, Michael.
Yeah. There's one I love doing. It's called Kaboom, and it's a title on my poetry CD called Kaboom. And so I started a class saying, I can't sit still, man. I got these fat rhymes in my head, man. They got me snapping and tapping, zipping and jumping, turning the whole world into something wild. Man, these rhymes don't mess around. They're precocious and ferocious and explosious. They're ready to set the moon on fire. They're ready to open all the cages, rip out all the pages, and start a whole new book. So watch out, man. Here's a message in a bottle. Hold on to the throttle because this rocket ship is taking off. We're skipping the countdown. Tell Houston we've definitely got a problem. We're about to take every law of science and shatter it like a supernova. Because these rhymes in my head, man, they make me want to scream. It's like one of those mad Martian dreams. You know, the one that keeps chasing after so hard you wish you had more legs? Man, when these rhymes are racing through my head, they don't have time to switch gears. They only have one gear. Psycho, crazy, super furious fast. So, ladies and gentlemen, hold on to your socks. Hold on to your shoes. Hold on to your elbows, your earlobes, your car keys, your credit cards, your half-paid mortgage, your family tree, your fear of the dark, the beat of your heart, the secret of art, the soul, the start, the flick of the spark, and watch the world go kaboom.
Michael Beadle, the world went kaboom when you entered it.
Well, I will tell you, the inspiration for that poem was a wonderful poetess that Asheville is proud to have, and that's Glennis mm-hmm. Redman. I saw her for the first time at Mars Hill for a Martin Luther King holiday performance, and I came home and wrote that poem. I was just blown away by her power, her energy, and I never knew that you could do slam poetry. And so I started locally at Bean Streets and places like that downtown, and kind of
the late great Bean Streets.
Yeah, and that's kind of where I got my start performing and just going to the open mic nights and kind of doing that. And so I wanted to you know, try different ways to reach kids. Sometimes it's a historical poem. Sometimes it's about family. Sometimes it's sort of quirky and silly. Mm-hmm. But sometimes I think the slam poetry really, really hits the younger kids. And they just go, wow, I want to do that.
Yeah.
And so I want to make sure that kids realize there are different ways to approach poetry. Mm-hmm. It's not just through analysis. like Billy Collins has that great poem about, you know, don't beat a confession out of it. You know, just appreciate it. Uh-huh. You don't have to do a poetry unit.
Let it wash over
you. Can just read it and just enjoy it. Maybe you pick a few ideas out of it.
Just enjoy the language. Yeah. First of all, just enjoy the language and talk. I mean, for performance poetry, I bet students listening to you do that, they're just hopping to do their own stuff.
Yeah, and I think it just, to me, I hope to be that kind of inspiration that, again, going back to Dead Poets Society, you know, that they get a charge somewhere there. Mm-hmm. And so I think if I can just try to provide some kind of inspiration there, mm-hmm. and just get, you know, light a fire, mm-hmm. you know, so shine a light, as you like to say. Yeah. So.
Michael, don't you also have a performance poem that has to do with basketball?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I worked on this for a while, and I just could not get it, you know, to come out right. I love basketball. I'm a big Carolina fan. Went to UNC Chapel Hill. And I was just so impressed with basketball as a kid, watching Michael Jordan and everything. So I had to write a poem about basketball. And so I just couldn't get it started. And so one day I was driving my car and I heard this sort of voice in my head. It was a little line from a poem that was about to emerge. Dribble, dribble, jump, stop. I just thought it sounded kind of cool. So I just started writing it down, a list of all kinds of words that you use in a basketball poem. So all these different words kind of came to me. And then I tried to shape it into a game, like a real life game. And I call it 3-2-1. Jump ball, y'all. Stand tall, y'all. Let's go. My sport, full court. And I'm ready to play. Fast break, shake and bake like the NBA. Step through, spin, move as I lay it in smooth. Cause time's running down and it's 3-2-1. It switch, can't miss another 3-point play. Gonna drive, gonna dish, gonna dunk all day. Gotta box out, clear out, on the glass. That's right, all night. And I'm ready for a pass. Cause time's running down and it's 3-2-1. Halftime, it's a crime because it stops the game. So I catch my breath while the coach explains the screens, the stats, and the full court press. Every shot we block, every shot we possess. The forwards, the guards, the big center, the will to learn, to get better. It's not about the points, it's about the team. Yo, coach, man, I know what you mean. Because time's running down and it's 3-2-1. Let me tell y'all what I love the most. Wave your hands in the stands as I coast to coast. Dribble, dribble, jump, stop, point guard, and I pivot. My man's wide open. So I give it up to the high post, down low, give and go, pick and roll. Time's running down, and it's 3-2-1. Ball game. Have a lot of fun with that because I do it sometimes in middle schools, and I heard one kid go, air ball. Yeah, you got some tough audiences in middle school. So. But a lot of times it's fun to do that poem and watch kids kind of light up going, wow, I didn't know poetry could do that. And I said, yeah, you could write poems about what
they
you love,
poetry,
you know, about soccer.
Can be fun.
Yeah, absolutely. But Billy Collins also said, you know, that the romantics kind of drained poetry of all its fun and humor with writing about dark, you know, death and all those things. I think, you know, poetry in its modern form has all these crazy shapes and different ways you can approach it. But I think bottom line is it's just the broad range of human emotion.
I do too.
You know, and it's just mm-hmm. it's just trying to find, because we want to reach for something to appeal to our emotions and, mm-hmm. and our senses. And everybody's mm-hmm. feeling these things. It's, mm-hmm. it's the poets that try to go, hey, don't forget to feel.
That's right.
We're surrounded by so many things today that are just sort of fake and phony. You know, these you know, commercials that you have that sort of look one way, and I think today people are just desperate for the genuine voice of someone, honesty, and just something that's what it's mm-hmm. like. I mean, that's why we appeal to leaders, you know, who say something that just sounds genuine.
That's right.
You know, we're so desperate for that. So I think poets try to lead the charge, mm-hmm. and I try to do that.
Well, you do it, Michael. And again, I mean, you can totally break my heart in one poem and just make me crack up in the next one.
Oh,
so
thank you.
You just take us all over the place. And that's a blessing. It's a talent for you and it's a gift for us. And we're lucky to have you. You know, Michael, you also do have two little books of very quiet haiku. So you can go from those long, outrageous performance poems to these little teeny haiku.
These came from journals. And so I thought, you know, well, I don't have to write a whole complete poem sometimes. Maybe they're just journal snippets. So I've came up with Friends We Haven't Met and An Invented Hour, two sort of poem booklets that are shortish poems, mini poems. There's a great poet, A.R. Ammons, who wrote a wonderful book called The Really Short Poems of A.R. Emmons. Uh-huh.
But these aren't haiku, though.
Some of them are. You know, some of them are just sort of short in length.
Poems, yeah.
So, some of them are kind of silly. Some of them are more serious. Just to share a few. I have tons of imaginary friends. They just haven't met me yet. Fish wrapped in newspaper. One eye peeks out. Smelly as a mermaid's belly button. If you can't think outside the box, at least paint it a different color. And I'd say this one's for procrastinators out there. The more I complain, the less time I have to procrastinate. So, you know, some of these are just kind of quick little snippets.
You have sort of a Benjamin Franklin in you.
Yeah, I don't know. Just by, I think, again, it's just
poor
the love
Michael's
of language.
Poor Michael's Almanac.
Poor Michael.
Poe Michael's Almanac.
Yeah, like a po' boy. So, but yeah, just having fun with that. And let me just say this. You, right now, I think, epitomize what I hope to be as a poet and as a teacher. Just encouraging other people to try to write what they can, to come from an honest experience. And I'm a better person because I have known you, and you've really taken my poetry to another level. And I'm so, so thankful that the state recognized your work to make you Poet Laureate, because it's really going to mean a lot for a lot of people. So I just can't tell you enough how much it's meant to know you and to be a poet. And to have you as a teacher, it's just been a great pleasure.
Thank you, Michael. And I never thought I would hear myself saying this, but it gives me just as much joy now in my career to see a poet like you craft a poem into the best Michael Beadle poem it can be, and then to hear you perform. And it's just huge joy for me. And like I said earlier, I knew as soon as I got Jefferson Davis to agree to let me do a 1 hour a month, I thought Michael Beadle is going to be one of my first guests.
Oh, well, thank
you
so
much. She's very
persuasive. I have a feeling she is.
I have a way about me.
It's a pleasure.
That's right.
Yeah, it's a pleasure. Just, you know, this one of those things I've heard one time, touch magic and pass it on.
Yeah.
You know, we have those wondrous moments, and we have a time to reflect and just share it.
Well, you know, I think that it's very simple. I say we can either put negative energy out into the universe or positive. And at every moment in our lives, we have that choice. And I don't always do it, but I try to choose the positive energy. Michael Beadle, I feel that you do. And the rest of the universe benefits from it. So, what else do you want to? We're almost out of time, and
we do need to mention that the book, the reading, and the book signing that you're going to have at Malaprops again.
Mention that again.
Yes, May 10th.
Sure, it's May 10th at Malaprops. It's on a Monday night at 7 p.m. And it's basically a sort of a dual book signing. It's for the Haywood County book that I just came out with, and it's a larger book on Haywood County history. It's a more comprehensive. About 500 pages, and that's called Haywood County Portrait of a Mountain Community. Mm-hmm. So there, some of the writers from that larger book will be there that night. And the editor was Curtis Wood, Dr. Curtis Wood. He's a longtime professor at Western Carolina.
Western, right. Mm-hmm.
Wonderful, wonderful historian.
Okay. Michael, where could they get your little books that you just read your little poems from? Friends We Haven't Met and An Invented Hour.
Well, everything's right here in Asheville at the best store in Asheville to go for books is Malaprops.
That would be Malaprops. Yes.
So absolutely, I love that store, and they do a great job of celebrating local writers. Mm.
And Michael, one day soon we should be getting a full length manuscript of the other poems that you read.
That's in the works right now. That's there's always a project for writers, right?
Right.
Well, I can't wait to have my hands on that.
I can't wait
you to sign it for me.
All right. Well. I can't wait to have it done.
Well, my mother allowed me just to stay out all night long.
stay out all night long. I didn't care what you long. I was boogieing around. When I was waking the town, people, I was walking down Hazen Street. Everybody was talking about Henry Swain Club. I decided I'd drop in there that night. When I got there, I said, yeah, people, they was really having a ball. Yes, I know her. Boogie Chillo. One night I was laying down. I heard Mama and Papa talking. I heard Papa tell Mama, let that boy boogie woogie. It's in him, and he got to come out. And I felt so good. Went on boogie just the same.
Wordplay for this week. Thanks so much for tuning in. This is the third of the Laureates Radio Hours. Thanks so much to Kathy Smith Bowers and to her guest Michael Beadle today.
Thank you, Jeff.
So glad y'all could be in. And if you want more information about today's show, be sure and check out naturespoetry.blogspot.com. Sometimes I'll cross post to the ashelfm.org website as well. You can always find out about the music we played and all kinds of other crazy information about what actually goes on. You never know. You never know. And if you want to continue to support the show, Poetry on the Radio, I mean, what a concept. Be sure and just click on that old donate button there at the Asheville FM website. Be good for you. Be good for you.